This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning. The question which David put to me was what did universities need to offer in order to meet the talent challenge? And reflecting on that question, clearly universities do many things, from research, engagement with employers, provision of CBD, whatever it may be, but also teaching students. And I think answering that question in the context of where we are today, post-Brown Review, where the title of the presentation is Meeting the Talent Challenge, I'm going to focus solely on the question of teaching students. That's not to say that universities don't do all these other things, but I think that's the focus of today. So what universities need to offer in terms of teaching students, I'm going to answer it in three ways. Firstly, by saying what universities need to offer is what the students want. Secondly, what universities need to offer needs to take into account of student choices, but we need to acknowledge that those choices will be conditioned by the circumstances students find themselves in. In other words, it's not a perfect market where students make absolutely clean choices, and therefore their financial circumstances, their geographical circumstances and so on will condition their choices, and that therefore has to be factored into what it is that universities offer. And then the third thing is that it's not just a question of relationship between the university and the student, because of course under the new proposals post-Brown, it's going to be the graduates that repay, which I think strikes at the theme of this talk today, that it's the students and the university, but also the graduate that needs to be factored in, and therefore the whole focus on graduates repaying when they have certain jobs means that inevitably we're looking very closely at what it is that graduates want when they have a job and in order to get a job. And that, I think, has to be the third piece in the equation. So those are the three questions I'm going to look at. So the first one is universities need to offer what students want. And it's interesting, actually, David, that you've asked me to speak first, which I think I'm very pleased about. But I am quite sure in a year or so's time, it will be automatic that it will be Aaron that speaks first, because he will be the voice of the student, and the student will be determining what it is that primarily what it is that universities offer. And that's the whole point about Lord Brown's report and the government's response, that the funding, public funding, is going to follow the student. It's often been argued in criticism, I think, of Brown, and I think wrongly in criticism of Brown, that the government and the public sector and the taxpayer are somehow disinvesting from higher education. That's absolutely not the case. It's being redirected, albeit with cuts and significant cuts. But the public funding, instead of going straight to universities, instead is being channeled through the student in terms of very significant support for loans and non-repayable grants. So, and that applies equally to the arts and humanities, I should say. So this redirection means that it does put students in the driving seat, and means that universities will have to respond to their choices in terms of place of study, be that university, be that further education college, be that whatever it is they choose to do, but also type of study, be that part-time, full-time, online, modular. Also, of course, choice of university and choice of course. So that's going to be very much how universities will need to respond to a growing student set of demands. And part of the equation, of course, is not just a choice of course, but I think critically how learning and teaching are delivered. And this is going to involve listening very carefully to what students are telling us about how they want to learn. I was very struck, actually, in this era of technological advance, that a study that GIST carried out last year was pretty conclusive, that actually what students really care about is face-to-face contact. Now, that is to be supported by sophisticated technology, but shouldn't take away from face-to-face contact, which is why the whole debate about contact hours is so important. But nonetheless, in that context, I think we have to look very creatively and not just assume that contact hours equates to what students want, full stop. It's a much more sophisticated picture of quality and learning outcomes and necessary support through imaginative means to allow home working, group working, all the rest of it. But nonetheless, I think this engagement with students about what universities offer has to also engage with changes to the mode of delivery. And so that, I think, is where looking at how to answer this first question, universities need to offer what students want. We need to involve in a much greater structural discussion with students, NUS and student groups within the universities about how we answer that question. Second response, what universities need to offer, is this whole question of conditioned choices. I think we all acknowledge that we're not and can't operate in a perfect market where the student as consumer is automatically going to make the right choice for them. That's partly because students are so diverse, coming from so diverse backgrounds, and these are hugely complicated choices that are going to affect their whole future. So inevitably, this means that the focus on information, advice and guidance is absolutely critical. That's going to be a core part of universities UK's work going forward, that we've got to really think about how we can make sure that choices that students are making are fully informed and reflect the extraordinary diversity in terms of what's on offer from the university sector. What's on offer geographically, what's on offer in terms of type of course, and all of that needs to be presented in a way that really makes sense to a variety of potential learners, be they mature, be they people in the workplace, or be they not just 16 and 17-year-olds, I should say, but also 14 and 15-year-olds that are going to make decisions that will affect their future choice of study at university and so on. So I think however you look at this, the role of information, advice and guidance is absolutely critical, and I think we need to get very much more sophisticated in how we approach that issue. But of course, it's not just a question then of students making choice because they've got the information. The financial circumstances in which they find themselves in, the family circumstances they find themselves in, are so important that the choice has to be supported by an acknowledgement of financial support and grants, making clear that they're absolutely aware of what's on offer. And that needs to be presented not in the language of there are these loans that are available. It needs to be offered in terms of, look, you really don't have to pay anything now, which is largely true. You will pay when you repay with a graduate. If you earn certain amounts, you will repay this. But if you come from a family where your income is below a certain threshold, you will pay precisely nothing. I'm not using words very carefully here, but the whole point, it needs to be made very explicit how the choice is presented to students so they are not disadvantaged because of their financial backgrounds. This is so important. It's the narrative of the government. It's absolutely critical to the way universities see this, that it should be needs blind and choices should not be determined by financial backgrounds. But I think there's a big step from speaking that rhetoric to making sure it actually happens in practice. And certainly at UK, we will be doing a lot of work in terms of monitoring the outcome of a post-brand landscape to make sure it does not have that impact. Because if we see patterns whereby poorer students are making choices which aren't in their own best interests but which are dictated by their financial circumstances, then we need to really look at how these new proposals are working, because that would cause real concern to my members, the universities, as well as, I think, to the larger public and the government as well. I think it's worth acknowledging also, because it needs to be more widely communicated, that the government's proposals do go a long way to try and alleviate the impact of financial background, in that the financial support that is available under these new proposals is more generous than the current package. And I think that does need to be said very loudly and clearly, that these are better for poorer students on the face of it in terms of financial support than the current arrangements. Third question is that it's not just a question of the student and the university, it's the question of the graduate, and this is critical because the whole system is, the financial system is premised on graduates repaying the cost of their courses, and that's not just a coincidence in the sense that graduates are the ones that have money. It relates very much to the point that David was talking about, that a lot of the narrative and thinking behind the Brown proposals and the government's response are tied up with thinking how universities can better support graduates in an employment market. How can the courses that are provided better support people going out and getting jobs? And that's the link into the graduate contribution. The It was very interesting listening to Richard Lambert talking at the CIHE lecture last week, where, speaking on behalf of the CBI, he made the point that it's critical that we don't adopt an over-utilitarian approach to what is a graduate job, and that students should be encouraged to think about their university experience solely in terms of what's likely to be a higher-earning employment and series of choices that they make in terms of their courses. His point, which rather reflects the point that David was making earlier, is that what employers are particularly looking for, in his terms, are people who can think straight. He made the same point that technical skills date very quickly. So what employers want is graduates who have the innate and taught ability to update their skills and to adapt to changing circumstances. And his comment was that the ability to think straight is just as much likely to come from a philosophy graduate than a STEM graduate. And I think that focus on skills for life and skills in a very challenging environment that graduates are facing is absolutely critical to this debate. No one is saying that we need to just pump all our money and encourage students to do engineering because then they'll get engineering jobs. That's facile in terms of the complex employment picture that we're looking at. And it's an ability to think and think for themselves that employers particularly want. And I was just thinking here, I was rather struck by what, just by way of illustration, Sheffield University lists as the 12 attributes that they want, the key skills it wants students to learn and acquire during their time at the institution. And of those 12 attributes, only one of them is knowledge in their subject area. The rest relates to critical, analytical and creative thinking, independent learning, problem solving, IT literate and so on and so forth. And that's the sort of pattern that I think we see across many universities, that providing knowledge in one particular skills area, be that philosophy or engineering, is a very small part of the picture. And David, your point about the interdisciplinarity is very much a theme that we're seeing from many universities, reflecting what it is that graduates need and what it is that that employers are looking for. So to conclude, I think in terms of what it is that universities need to do, listen to students. Clearly they've always done that and students have been central, but I think what we're talking about is a real sea change in terms of students dictating what it is that they want and universities responding. That needs to be conditioned not only by the acknowledgement of the financial circumstances that students are in, but by the broader knowledge and understanding that universities have, taking account the wide diversity of positions that applicants to university will come from. And then thirdly, it needs to be conditioned by a full awareness of where it is that graduates are going to find themselves in this extremely complicated economic and social environment. That's not just a question of narrow vocational skills. It's got to be a far broader and more ambitious set of skills and competences that they acquire. And I think perhaps underpinning all of this is an acknowledgement that post-Brown, we really are in a different sort of landscape, and we really do have to think very differently about these sorts of questions. And I think all of us need to shift our thinking away from the way that we have done things into a very different climate where both students and graduates are absolutely at heart at how teaching is delivered.
Thank you.
Thank you.